Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Oh,
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, no, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city. Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances. Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they'd span the Atlantic from New York to London. Chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe, but they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time. This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. He's supplier is only a bike ride away. But even the supplier is dangerously low on stock. Mr. He has found barely enough parts to last the day. When he gets another urgent call. Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year, but Yupa wants more. Little wonder Lu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality. In a factory this big with a production run so massive,
Even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down. Unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply. And soon.
If we don't get them the parts, 6 production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on. Mr. He finally arrives, and he has good news. He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away. His wife, Hong Zhang-yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury. Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiaomeng, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly lines. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms. In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all. The communist regime established so-called special economic zones,
designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs. Almost all parts are made on-site, keeping supply costs low and parts within easy reach.
Because we are in this location pretty much isolated, we don't have satellite suppliers around us to build, you know, parts for us. So we had to do it in-house, and we had to do it in a large scale.
Yupa's main advantage is a cheap and endless labor force, ready to work for a fraction of a Western wage. 16-year-old Mao Fen Guo left her family and came here in 2008. But Guo isn't just looking for work. She's here to escape poverty and make her mother proud. In China, many parents prefer sons to daughters.
My mother has only two daughters. She's always upset about that. And in order to not let her down, I must work harder and harder.
Guo is a worker in training. With about 1,000 other students, she attends Yupa's on-site trade school. To get here, she had to pass entry exams and pay Yupa tuition. Now she's enrolled in 3 years of study and hands-on training at the factory. If she does well, Guo hopes for a job at Yupa.
At the very beginning, I thought it was very hard. But now that I've gone through all this, it's easier. There's a lot to learn, but I'm still full of confidence.
Today, she and her classmates are learning everything they ever wanted to know and more about irons. To get a job, Guo must learn the ins and outs of every product line.
We're changing constantly. Last time, we were making grills. Then we changed to coffee makers, and now electric irons.
Workers on 27 production lines pump out an iron every 15 seconds, and as many as 60,000 irons a day. Production includes at least 10 separate brands for dozens of companies. With over 30 steps to assembly, iron making is intricate work, and there's no room for error. Assembly starts with a water spray unit, made up of springs, rubber, and washers. With training and practice, it snaps into the spout in seconds.
If it's not closed tight, it will leak or blow. Then it won't work properly.
Now the sprayer and spout are joined to the handle. The two parts of the water reservoir are placed in a heating machine. That melts the space between them and makes the reservoir watertight.
Welding is an important part of production. However, it will be easy as long as we follow our operational guidelines.
Next, the thermostat is attached to the base.
You need to make sure you're using the correct format before you insert the base. Using a wrong base can lead to fire. Wiring is also important. Where there is a wiring mistake, there's hidden trouble.
A plastic buffer is placed between the heating element and the handle to keep the handle and the user's hand from getting too hot. After that, the plug is welded to the back of the iron.
We're connecting the wire for the power supply. I can do about 4 to 5 pieces every minute and 300 pieces an hour.
Once the spray and steam buttons are attached, it's testing time. First, the steam and squirting functions. Second, the iron's electrical system. Faulty units are either repaired or removed. Finally, irons that pass inspection are packed up and shipped away. The team won't cut corners or settle for second best. Today, Guo and her classmates will put classroom theory into practice and work the iron mine. For a teenager from a small town, living and working in a giant factory can be overwhelming.
My life is not as hard as it was before. I'm getting used to this place now.
Work on the iron line goes better than expected. For Guo, juggling work and school isn't that difficult. The hard part is leaving family and living far from home.
I guess it's learning how to be independent. When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Like China, Guo is adapting to a new world of high technology and tough international competition. And like China itself, she's determined to succeed.
I don't see myself working on the production line forever, doing the same job. Maybe I'm a bit arrogant or too confident about myself, but I want a better future.
For some people, a better future keeps them married to their job. Workers at Yupa are married to the company. Based in southeast China, Yupa is one of the biggest factories on the planet. Today and every day, its 17,000 workers are getting the world ready for breakfast. In the next 24 hours, it will produce 1,200 conventional coffee makers. Over the next 30 days, these assembly lines will deliver 210,000 cappuccino espresso machines. In the space of 1 year, nearly 2.5 million coffee makers will pour out of Yupa and into the kitchens of the world. At the center of all this is Young Lee.
We already have 200 or 300 styles, and we develop and add over 40 new styles every year.
Lee's mandate is crucial and broad. Tackle any problem that could slow down non-stop production.
We have to make every effort to find these problems and to solve them. We have to make sure that every process is working perfectly. Manufacturing shouldn't be delayed because of these problems.
Today, he's got a brand new kind of problem. One of Yupa's big clients has designed a new coffee maker. It's up to Lee to build a working prototype to entice the client into going ahead with mass production. Hundreds of Yupa jobs and millions of dollars in potential business are now in Lee's hands.
Making prototypes is a large portion of my job and is vitally important to the development of the company.
Lee starts by assembling the heating system for the water and steam. Then he carefully places it into the main body. Just when Lee's ready to assemble it all, there are parts missing. The supplier is just a walk away, a long walk, but Lee doesn't mind the distance. Someone special is waiting for him at the supply depot. The person helping him today is his girlfriend. These perks make Yupa more than a place of work. With a workforce of 17,000, many of them married with kids, this factory city turns office space into personal space.
And on the work side, we have
Sometimes we work together. For example, if we need the help from the technician to solve production problems, then we meet each other afterwards.
Li Yang Li works in the parts supply department. She first came to Yuba in 2004.
We fell in love at first sight. I always think it must be God who makes her work here and wait for me. Even now, I still think the same.
Yupa management encourages these intimate connections. They believe couples that work together are more loyal to the company.
By working in the same company, we can go to work together and take care of each other. We can see each other more often. What's more, we can be with each other when we have a problem.
With the missing parts in hand, Li is ready for wiring. Making it all fit into the chamber isn't easy.
I will have to organize all the electrical wires properly to make sure the coffee maker operates safely.
But the real test will come after shipping. If the client approves of Li's model, Yupa could get a massive order. If it doesn't, hundreds of jobs are on the line.
If I make the prototype in a sloppy way, our customers will lose confidence in the quality of our products. It will be a great loss to our company.
Weeks later, Li's model is approved for mass production. And right away, he sets out to create a brand new production line. It takes a week to prepare the assembly line and train the workers to make the new coffee machine.
Making a coffee maker is not an easy job at all. It requires professional knowledge and a profound understanding of coffee culture.
When the prep is done, Factory City springs into action and works with astonishing speed. Li's prototype took half a day to make. Now line workers churn out 700 machines a day. Li's shift is done. And when work ends at Factory City, romance begins.
When we're done work, we normally go shopping together or take a walk. It gives us a sense of happiness.
The couple plan to get married at a mass wedding, paid for and organized by the company. All at once, dozens of Yupa workers will tie the knot, while thousands of co-workers look on.
Good evening and thank you for joining us. We're going to begin tonight with outrage over another deadly police shooting, this time in North Carolina. The mayor of Elizabeth City has declared a state of emergency, and the family of Andrew Brown Jr. is demanding transparency tonight after the sheriff there showed them just a few seconds of body camera video that was recorded as deputies served felony warrants on the 42-year-old father last Wednesday. The shooting has sparked protests in North Carolina because witnesses say deputies opened fire at the unarmed 42-year-old's car as he was driving away, hitting him in the back of the head. At the same time tonight, in a sign of how the Biden administration will handle concerns about unfair policing, Attorney General Merrick Garland says he's opening a federal investigation into the Louisville, Kentucky Police Department. The probe comes after the shooting death of Breonna Taylor in March 2020. She was also shot and killed by police during a botched police raid on her apartment. CBS's Jeff Begays will have more on that new federal investigation in just a moment. But first, CBS's Manuel Bohorquez is going to lead off our coverage tonight in North Carolina. Good evening, Manny.
Good evening, Nora. The protesters who had gathered behind us have now started to march down the streets of downtown. It is day five of protests. We can also report that the family's private viewing of a clip of the shooting death has done nothing to ease the tensions here. They have called the death an execution, and protesters want the video to be made public.
A state of emergency in effect tonight in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. And Andrew Brown's family is in a state of anger.
We only saw a snippet of the video.
Brown's family, flanked by attorneys and dozens of supporters, demanded answers after the family was only allowed to view 20 seconds of police body cam video.
My dad got executed just by trying to save his own life.
Brown's family attorney, Chantel Sherry Lassiter, says the video shows him with his hands on the steering wheel.
Can you tell us how many shots you heard in those 20 seconds?
For it to be 20 seconds, it was numerous shots. It was too many to count in 20 seconds.
Last Wednesday, Pasquotank County Sheriff's deputies were attempting to serve multiple warrants for Brown, a father of seven, for felony drug charges, when witnesses say he tried to leave in his vehicle. That's apparently when deputies opened fire. A first responder can be heard on scanner audio saying Brown was shot in the back.
Provided EMS, he's got one male, 42 years of age, gunshot to the back.
He was trying to evade being shot.
Yes.
So he backs out, not forward, but backs out away from the officers who's still shooting at him.
The family says all of the officers in the video have their faces blurred. Since the shooting, seven deputies have been put on paid administrative leave.
You want to see it unedited, and you want the public to see it unedited.
That's the way it should be shown, unedited.
Enough is enough!
Protesters and the governor have called on Pasquotank County Sheriff Tommy Wooten to release the body cam footage of all of the officers. Wooten says the tapes should be shown to the public if it won't hinder the state's investigation.
Once I get that confirmation, our county will file a motion in court to have the footage released.
North Carolina has a law that generally requires a judge to sign off on the release of body cam video. That has not happened in this case. Also tonight, the sheriff of the county just issued a video statement calling the shooting tragic, adding that it was over in less than 30 seconds and saying that body cam video can be hard to decipher. Nora?
All right, Manny Bohorquez, thank you.
There's new video that shows the moments leading up to the police shooting of Andrew Brown Jr. Sheriff's deputies shot Brown in his car last week while they were executing a search warrant at his home in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. We still haven't seen the body cam video, but a nearby security camera recorded the deputies pulling up in a pickup truck. Look. Well, that's the video. New today, the FBI has launched a civil rights investigation into the shooting. And lawyers for Brown's family released their own findings of their own independent autopsy. The lawyers say the cops shot Brown five times as they moved in to arrest him. Four shots in the arm and a kill shot to the back of his head as he tried to drive away.
He was leaving the site trying to evade being shot at by these particular law enforcement officers who we believe did nothing but a straight-out execution by shooting him in the back of his head as he was trying to get away in a moving vehicle.
Well, according to a search warrant, Brown allegedly sold drugs to an undercover informant, and the deputies were there to arrest him for intent to sell 3 grams of meth and 3 grams of cocaine. The family's lawyers say the warrant was no license to kill.
The law enforcement in this country cannot be judge, jury, and executioner. Andrew did not get his due process. He was innocent. I don't care what the warrant, what the search warrant, he was innocent. He maintained the presumptions of innocence.
Looking ahead, we could find out tomorrow if and when the public might see the police body cam video from the shooting. NBC's Megan Fitzgerald is live on scene tonight. Megan?
Shep, look, that hearing is scheduled for tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., and that's when we could hear from a judge whether or not the public will be able to see that video. Now, the media, including NBC News, has filed a petition, and so has the sheriff, as he has promised to be transparent. But I can tell you there is growing criticism from the family who was only able to see a 20-second snippet of a redacted video.
law enforcement intentionally edited the video to 30 sec to 20 seconds.
20 seconds.
And intentionally blurred out the office
and guns.
And guns, and showed us what they wanted to show us under the guise of it being pertinent.
I can tell you the community here is outraged, taking to the streets for the sixth night in a row, demanding the release of that video. Today, Andrew Brown's son saying that between the snippet, the 20-second video that he saw, and the newly released autopsy that the family commissioned, he is convinced that his father was executed.
Yesterday, I said he was executed. This autopsy report showed me that was correct. Those three gunshots to the arm, that weren't enough? That weren't enough? It's obvious he was trying to get away. It's obvious. And they're going to shoot him in the back of the head. Man, that's not right.
Now, the sheriff says that the autopsy is just one piece of a larger puzzle, and he's calling for the state's investigation to be completed. Meanwhile, the governor of North Carolina is calling for a special investigator, a special prosecutor, to take over this case, Shep.
Shepard Smith here. Thanks for watching CNBC on YouTube.
Do you feel like this is an attempt at a cover-up? I've never heard of a video being redacted before even the family could see it. Does that sound normal to you?
It doesn't at all, especially when it's the family. We're not talking about what's released to the public. Bishop Barber knows Eastern Carolina better than I would ever know. But the one thing that just was appalling to us was the fact that not only would you only show them 20 seconds, you redacted their faces, but you then release the warrant and all the criminal history of Andrew Brown to assassinate his character, but you will blur out the faces of those officers and not give their names. Well, we want to see their rap sheet since they are putting out the rap sheet of Andrew Brown. And finally, Joy, my 8-year-old daughter could understand that if you're only showing 20 seconds of a video, then you're hiding something. Because if Andrew Brown would have did something bad in there, we wouldn't need a judge to sign it. They would have that all over the news.
Absolutely. And Bishop Barber, tell us about this community, because this is a small town, I understand. This is not like a very big city. Tell us a little bit about this community and what the reactions are about, from the people that you're talking with.
This is Elizabeth City, where Elizabeth City State University is. It's in Eastern North Carolina. There's a long history of police conduct in Eastern North Carolina, and people know it. They know the arrogance. This is where Jesse Hems and others had his stronghold. You should also add to your list George Donovan Lynch in West Virginia Beach, the list of those you said had been killed since the trial. But this is Eastern North Carolina, and also we should be putting pressure on the DA. See, what the sheriff didn't say was that he didn't have to go to the SBI. The SBI said, no, you don't have to do that. They could have gone straight to the judge. The DA could have done that. It's been 120 hours. Think about this, and I was thinking about what Crump and other lawyer Daniels and Vaccari, they were there. 120 hours have passed. They only got to see 20 seconds. 120 hours have passed. They only got to see 20 seconds. And that's why tomorrow, one local pastor has called for the North Carolina NAACP repairs of the breach, the North Carolina Council of Churches, and the AME Zion Church. We're calling together pastors to declare there's a state of moral emergency. Now, they call it a state of emergency. No, the real emergency is this moral emergency, this judicial emergency. And this is not a matter of national security. That's when you redact. The national security is the killing of black folk. And it doesn't matter to us whether the cause is black or white. When you engage in violence toward people and shoot unarmed people and people fleeing away, and we think that there may have been a major rifle assault, like a SWAT team kind of going after this one young man with no history of violence. But what people should also know about Eastern North Carolina is people in North Carolina, they might be slow, but when we move, we take deep root and we stand. Some of the strongest work came out of Eastern North Carolina. So this fight will occur. The people will be nonviolent, but they will be vigilant. And we're going to get to the bottom of this in this county. This cannot stand. This young man, 7 children, 2 grown, 5 minors, he's a nephew, he's an uncle, he's a son, 42 years old, shot in the back. This is something that cannot stand, and it won't stand. And we must put pressure on the sheriff and the DA. Lastly, Joy, you should know I talked to the Attorney General of the state, along with Dr. Spearman. You should know this. The DA right now, Brother Crump knows this as well, could call the state attorney general, just like they did in Minnesota, and say, take this case. Now, in North Carolina, the local has to ask for it. The state can't take it from him. But the local DA could right now say, this is too messy. We've messed it up. Give it to the state AG, and they could handle this. All of that could be done in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
The same amount of time they let the family see this tape after 120 hours.
You know, and Ben, that is a really good point. I mean, they've already, three deputies, from what I have here, have resigned already. Seven have been put on leave. That seemed to be awfully, awfully quick. I mean, Pasquotank County has only 55 sworn deputies. Out of those deputies, 10 of them have either resigned or gone on leave. I just want you to clear up something for us in the law. People keep talking about the fleeing felon rule. You said something today that I thought was very important to repeat. You said that the most dangerous thing, apparently, to police is a black man running from them. Under the fleeing felon rule, police are not allowed to shoot somebody simply because they are fleeing, correct?
Absolutely. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that it is not against the law to flee from the police, and it should not be the death penalty just because you're black and you're running away. We never hear about them, Joy and Bishop Barber, shooting white men in the back, but them shooting black men in the back in America is almost like a cliche. I mean, Jacob Blake Jr. in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Walter Scott in South Carolina, Laquan McDonald in Chicago, Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Christian Hall up in Pennsylvania. I mean, Anthony McClain in Pasadena, California, who literally ran out of his shoes and they shot him in the back. So we have to get this George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed, and hopefully Bishop Barber, Eastern Carolina, can be added to the list of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Jacob Blake as reasons why we have to act now.
You know,
we cannot hold this off.
And you know, Bishop Barber, Merrick Garland, Attorney General of the United States, has announced a pattern and practice investigation in Kentucky. Do you think that there needs to be one in North Carolina?
Yes, there needs to be. First of all, we need to pass the bill right now in the North Carolina in the North Carolina State Assembly that will open up body cams for public. That needs to be done. But we need accountability. The only way you get accountability is you have to have proper investigation. Then you have to have proper, when you find that someone has murdered someone, shot them in the back, and they're police, a warrant, a badge, and a gun is too much power for a bigot and someone trigger happy, there needs to be prosecution without immunity, there needs to be imprisonment, and there needs to be federal investigation of pattern and practice. It's been a long time overdue in Eastern North Carolina. This case needs to make it happen, and you're right, we need to get these things passed. We don't need Sinema or Manchin blocking this. This is serious business. This is about people's lives, and we can see clearly, if you don't have the kind of federal law that standardizes this stuff, then you have one thing happen in one county, another thing happen in another county, depending on the sheriff, depending on the DA. No, we need accountability, transparency, and truth, and we need it now.
Absolutely. And I will add to that, just for my, you know, Bakari Sellers said something, and he's very familiar with the media, to people in my profession, don't fall for the banana in the tailpipe. Don't run with Andrew Brown Jr.'s history, because police do this. Rudy Giuliani used to do this when he was mayor of New York. Police would kill somebody. All of a sudden, their whole juvenile record comes out. Everything about them. Well, they're not a choir boy. Don't fall for that. This is not about this dead young black man's history. This is about him getting killed. Don't fall for that. We don't want to hear stories all about whatever he ever did wrong in his life. We need to know why he was shot and killed, whether he was shot in the back while he was driving away. That is the story. That's just my plea to those of us who are covering this story. Bishop.
Hey, thanks for watching our YouTube channel. You should know that you can follow today's top stories and breaking news and catch up on your favorite MSNBC shows all in one place. Download the NBC News app today.
Do you feel like this is an attempt at a cover-up? I've never heard of a video being redacted before even the family could see it. Does that sound normal to you?
It doesn't at all, especially when it's the family. We're not talking about what's released to the public. Bishop Barber knows Eastern Carolina better than I would ever know. But the one thing that just was appalling to us was the fact that not only would you only show them 20 seconds, you redacted their faces, but you then release the warrant and all the criminal history of Andrew Brown to assassinate his character, but you will blur out the faces of those officers and not give their names. Well, we want to see their rap sheet since they are putting out the rap sheet of Andrew Brown. And finally, Joy, my 8-year-old daughter could understand that if you're only showing 20 seconds of a video, then you're hiding something. Because if Andrew Brown would have did something bad in there, we wouldn't need a judge to sign it. They would have that all over the news.
Absolutely. And Bishop Barber, tell us about this community, because this is a small town, I understand. This is not like a very big city. Tell us a little bit about this community and what the reactions are about, from the people that you're talking with.
This is Elizabeth City, where Elizabeth City State University is. It's in Eastern North Carolina. There's a long history of police conduct in Eastern North Carolina, and people know it. They know the arrogance. This is where Jesse Hams and others had his stronghold. You should also add to your list George Donovan Lynch in West Virginia Beach, the list of those you said had been killed since the trial. But this is Eastern North Carolina, and also we should be putting pressure on the DA. See, what the sheriff didn't say was that he didn't have to go to the FBI. The FBI actually said, no, you don't have to do that. They could have gone straight to the judge. The DA could have done that. It's been 120 hours. Think about this, and I was thinking about what Crump and other lawyer Daniels and Bakari, they were there. 120 hours have passed. They only got to see 20 seconds. 120 hours have passed. They only got to see 20 seconds. And that's why tomorrow, one local pastor has called for the North Carolina NAACP repairs of the breach, the North Carolina Council of Churches, and the AME Zion Church. We're calling together pastors to declare there's a state of moral emergency. Now, they call it a state of emergency. No, the real emergency is this moral emergency, this judicial emergency. And this is not a matter of national security. That's when you redact. The national security is the killing of black folk. And it doesn't matter to us whether the cause is black or white. When you engage in violence toward people and shoot unarmed people and people fleeing away, and we think that there may have been a major rifle assault, like a SWAT team kind of going after this one young man with no history of violence. But what people should also know about Eastern North Carolina is people in North Carolina, they might be slow, but when we move, we take deep root and we stand. Some of the strongest work came out of Eastern North Carolina. So this fight will occur. The people will be nonviolent, but they will be vigilant. They will be vigilant. And we're going to get to the bottom of this in this county. This cannot stand. This young man, 7 children, 2 grown, 5 minors. He's a nephew. He's an uncle. He's a son. 42 years old, shot in the back. This is something that cannot stand and it won't stand. And we must put pressure on the sheriff and the DA. Lastly, Joy, you should know, I talked to the attorney general of the state along with Dr. Spearman. You should know this. The DA right now, Brother Crump knows this as well, could call the state attorney general, just like they did in Minnesota, and say, take this case. Now, in North Carolina, the local has to ask for it. The state can't take it from him. But the local DA could right now say, this is too messy. We've messed it up. Give it to the state AG, and they could handle this. All of that could be done in 20 seconds, the same amount of time they let the family see this tape after 120 hours.
You know, and Ben, that is a really good point. I mean, they've already, 3 deputies, from what I have here, have resigned already. 7 have been put on leave. That seemed to be awfully, awfully quick. I mean, Pasquotank County has only 55 sworn deputies. Out of those deputies, 10 of them have either resigned or gone on leave. I just want you to clear up something for us in the law. People keep talking about the fleeing felon rule. You said something today that I thought was very important to repeat. You said that the most dangerous thing apparently to police is a black man running from them. Under the fleeing felon rule, police are not allowed to shoot somebody simply because they are fleeing, correct?
Absolutely. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that it is not against the law to flee from the police, and it should not be the death penalty just because you're black and you're running away. We never hear about them, Joy and Bishop Barber, shooting white men in the back. But them shooting black men in the back in America is almost like a cliche. I mean, Jacob Blake Jr. in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Walter Scott in South Carolina. Laquan McDonald in Chicago. Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Christian Hall up in Pennsylvania. I mean, Anthony McClain in Pasadena, California, who literally ran out of his shoes and they shot him in the back. So we have to get this George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed, and hopefully Bishop Barber, Eastern Carolina, can be added to the list of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Jacob Blake as reasons why we have to act now.
You know,
we cannot hold this off.
And you know, Bishop. We'll be right back.
For some reason that I cannot fathom, Tucker Carlson invited Candace Owens to analyze and interpret the three guilty verdicts for former police officer Derek Chauvin, who of course killed George Floyd last year. Yesterday we covered live those three guilty verdicts. And what's funny about this is that Candace Owens has no idea about anything. It's not clear to me why she comments about anything, never mind jury trials. Owens has become sort of a conservative darling in some circles as a, I guess, former liberal who found conservatism. And of course, being a black woman, even though the right is against identity politics, black woman gives her a particularly useful identity to the American right wing. But watching her melt down and just grasp at straws is both entertaining, but it's also a reminder that tons of people will see this. They will see what Candace Owens, what you are about to see from Candace Owens, and because they are unable to think for themselves, they will accept it hook, line, and sinker. And that's a very dangerous reality. Let's take a look at the first clip.
Candace Owens, you'd think in a country like ours, very top, I mean, this is the most first world country that's ever been, you'd think the most civilized and the most just. Here you have to consider a murder case through the lens of politics. When you get to that point, haven't you already given up civilization?
Well, that's correct. And what we're really seeing is mob justice, and that's really what happened with this entire trial. This was not a trial about George Floyd or Derek Chauvin. This was a trial about whether the media was powerful enough to create a simulation and decide upon a narrative absent any facts.
It's almost like she didn't watch the trial where fact after fact after medical fact and documentary evidence were introduced. Mob justice. What is she talking about? And she gets even more divorced from reality the longer she's allowed to keep speaking and answering the same question.
Whether it was powerful enough to repeat showing and talking about a 9-minute clip that came from somebody's cell phone without adding any context, without showing the full, you know, the full police video, which they could have released. They refused to release the full body cam, which would have added more clarity.
Now, this is sort of slippery. She throws in that the video of George Floyd being killed is from a cell phone. So what? What difference does it make that it's from a cell phone rather than CCTV footage, rather than 4K or whatever? And then she gish-gallops right into the body cam footage wasn't even revealed. The absence of body cam footage doesn't change this from a guilty verdict into a not guilty verdict. It's possible that if the body cam footage was released, it might have shown something different. Or it might have shown the same thing, probably the same thing based on the sort of clear-cut nature of the video we do have. But the absence of a video doesn't actually make the verdict wrong, and it doesn't make it mob justice. And more importantly, with how frequently body cam footage is, quote, lost or unavailable due to technical problems, if there were no cell phone video, for all we know, there'd be no video at all, and we'd have zero accountability. It is rare that you actually have such an incident where there are witnesses and video when you were talking about the death of someone. Understand that, you know, the vast majority of homicides, there's just no video, and cases don't have the documentary evidence that we had here. Okay, let's watch one more clip.
To the fact that the media was lying. You know, the media came out, let's not forget this, Tucker, the media came out and told us that this was a man who was just getting his life together. He was a good, you know, good member of society, and he got mixed up because a racist white police officer had it out for him and killed him. All of that fell apart.
Those actually are not statements that really have anything to do with the trial. You had jury selection. Derek Chauvin's attorney had every opportunity to strike jurors, potential jurors, if he felt that they had prejudged the case, that they already believed that Derek Chauvin was guilty or whatever. There was a fair jury selection process. Floyd turning his life around or not is not actually relevant to the case. She is completely off the rails. Let's actually watch a little bit more here.
All the facts came out and all of that fell apart. We now know, of course, that he had enough fentanyl in him. It was three times the lethal dosage, three times lethal dosage in him when he died. But nobody cares.
Doctors testified very specifically during the trial. George Floyd did not die of a fentanyl overdose. This is trash. It is nonsense. But people are already repeating this stuff on Twitter and elsewhere. One more clip.
because the media was successful in putting out a narrative, and they kept hitting that narrative. And the reason why the Democrats are happy is because they realize, of course, the media supports them, and now means the Democrats can get whatever they want because they can create a narrative, and then they can treat people like pawns and get them to basically say, if we don't get what we want, we will riot, we will loot, we will send these people out like soldiers to destroy your neighborhoods. And that is exactly what has happened. That has been the determination of this trial. The media and the Democrats now have enough power to bully and to lie to and to create propaganda and to successfully win. And that is what happened, and they are celebrating that win today. This was not a fair trial.
Only one side.
No person can say this was a fair trial.
She's just completely out of control. And who is she to say if the trial was fair? There was jury selection, and both sides had a chance to weigh in on jurors. They accepted the slate of jurors. The judge is there. They will get a chance to appeal if they want, but she just decided that this is not a fair trial. It's actually a tragedy that Candace Owens is interviewed as some kind of expert, I guess, on what? I don't know. Democrats are happy. This is the sort of Don Jr. liberals want people to die of COVID to hurt Trump thing. No one's happy about this. I don't take joy at people going to prison. I'm against imprisoning people as a sort of general principle. It's horrifying that this trial even had to take place. I would rather Derek Chauvin be a good police officer and George Floyd be alive. But George Floyd is not alive, and accountability is necessary. But what I do enjoy is the right wing melting down over this verdict, and we're going to look at some more examples momentarily. One of our sponsors is Privacy.com. They're giving you $5 when you sign up for their completely free service at Privacy.com/Pacman. I've been using Privacy for a little over a year now. You've heard me talk about it before. It's a lifesaver, and here's how it works. It takes just a couple of minutes to set up. Anytime you buy something online or on the phone, instead of actually using your real credit card number, the Privacy app and the browser plugin let you give each company a randomized virtual credit card number that you create out of thin air. It'll even autofill the card number with one click. And the payment is taken out of your checking account without the merchant ever knowing your real information. So this allows you to keep your banking information secure, but also to take control of your finances. You can create up to 12 of these virtual credit cards a month. You can set spending limits. You can freeze them. You can delete them anytime you want. So when you do this, it means you're not going to be charged when you don't want to be, because you can destroy the virtual card number right after using it. Which, for instance, I love using free trials because I know I won't be charged when the trial is over if I use a virtual credit card number. You're keeping your identity private by not telling companies who you are. You're keeping your bank or credit card info protected against data breaches and identity theft. And it's free. And like I said, $5 to spend when you sign up at privacy.com/Pacman.
All right, we were doing trending topics today. The last audio we played, commentary on Candace Owens' point of view, I guess, on the Chauvin video. Excuse me, not video. Candace Owens recently became a mother of a, let's put this American style, she gave birth to a baby boy or black baby boy, as he will be identified in these United States. Question of the day is, will Candace Owens have a wake-up call within the next 15 to 20 years when her son gets pulled over by the police? Will she be looking at the statements that she's made today about the Chauvin trial? She says that the jury got it wrong. I disagree with her on that one. But I'm conservative, but she's conservative. She's uber conservative. But will she have a change of, I mean, will she look back 15, 20 years from now when, because she's going to have to, she and her husband, they're going to have to give her son to talk when he's approaching his 10 years. Or if not, I hope, I'm not wishing anything bad on her or her son or her family, but if her son has an encounter with the police that goes left, will Candace Owens sound more like Trayvon Martin's mother, Mike Brown's mother, Eric Gardner's mother and wife? Will she sound more like, let's see, well, George Floyd's mother and George Floyd's, his last girlfriend's wife, but he also has a child by a black woman. So in 15 to 20 years from now, do you think Candace Owens will experience a wake-up call via her son, who, although he's interracial, I mean, he's biracial, half black, half white, but in the Western world, particularly in the United States, we identify, well, he'll be identified as a black man. Question, I think she'll have a wake-up call. That's just me. 619, but once again, it's not going to come for another, I put it at 15 to 20 years old, somewhere around those ages where, you know, the teen years, you know, you're, well, actually, we can go down as low as maybe even 12 years old, within the next 12 to 20 years, because, you know, 12, even before that, you know, you're, we humans are more independent thinking. We want more freedom. Just the natural course of things, regardless of any race or religion or what have you, or sex. I think her husband's a Brit. So whether she's in the United States or the UK, I like I say, it's within the next 15 to 20 years, and I think it'll be within those ranges. She'll have a major wake-up call where her rhetoric will maybe do a 180 from where it is right now. So through her eyes, Chauvin, well, she said the Chauvin jury got it wrong. I don't know of any case where high-profile case with Kansas. I mean, I might be wrong, you know, but if Candace, I don't know what her opinion is on any of these high-profile cases, but I'm sure there's some video out there. So if you do know, 619-768-2945, or you can comment on any of these other videos that we played sound bites of. But like I say, question of the day is, what do you think Candace Owens will have a wake-up call and do a 180 about face on some of the statements that she, particularly this Chauvin case, but there'll be others. In any event, 314, your mic is open.
What would she have a wake-up call for? Did I miss out on a wake-up call?
Well, no, I'm not saying she's had one yet. I'm saying she will probably have one within the next 15 to 20 years. Well, she gave birth recently this year to a black child.
Well, my wife did too.
Which is a black boy.
My wife did too.
Okay,
my daughter did too.
Well, let's go with this.
My brother's got 21 of them.
Okay,
he lives in Alabama.
Okay, do you think Now, Candace Owens says that the jury got it wrong with the Chauvin case.
I think the judge should have sequestered the jury. It should have been held in a different county. So if that's the case, if they was using a tainted
opinion,
jury,
okay.
Yes, the jury would have been tainted. He gave instruction not to go home and watch TV, but how do you know they didn't? How do you know someone, family members, didn't call him?
Okay. Well, that's all true. That could have happened. But so based on that, which you give
yeah,
a legitimate...
Yeah, but the judge should have... Don't you think the judge should have sequestered the jury and leave out of the courthouse, get on the bus, get
that,
in the car, drive through the neighborhood?
That would have made sense. Because you're right, you can't... We don't know who... There was no way to monitor what these people said in their own individual private homes.
So let me ask you a question. Suppose that the immediate neighborhood of the courthouse was a white community, and they had to drive through it, stop at stoplights and stop signs, to get through where they live. Now what would the people have to say it if the verdict had went the other way? Well, the whites convinced them and all this crap.
Well, he'll probably appeal this conviction. And some of the grounds that he's going to base that appeal on is some of the things you just said. So that's coming. That I'm not a part of his legal team. I'm just speculating that he will appeal and that some of the issues that Valerie will come up.
A person got is not against the law to run from the police. That was a whole different case. Some kids see police came and they ran. Well, they can run. But if you're a felon and you flee the police, that's against the law.
Yeah,
but why come they don't say that, L.A.?
Well, you know why.
Huh?
You know why they get people.
No.
They get people think jacked up on an issue and ride with emotions.
Ignorance build off of ignorance.
Well,
that's what it is. Ignorance will build off of ignorance and even stupidity. If you got a warrant, a felony warrant, that means you have done something that was felonious against the state. Your butts need to go be turned in. What in the hell do the people think that a person got the right to drive away from when they're being apprehended?
Well, I think that's very foolish to try to. Man, just don't resist. Get handcuffed peacefully. Like Warren Houston says, you don't hold court on the street.
They got a right. You got blacks out here that don't committed all this bull crap. Now they because of these anarchists. Events that we've seen that's been allowed to go on by some of the most ill-informed politicians you ever want to see, these mayors, they believe they got, well, we got all these on our side. We can go ahead and the police come out and we just run. Like that woman in Nashville, she got out the car and she asked the police, could she go use the bathroom?
Yeah, and I played
that
audio a couple weeks ago. Hey, I know she ran away.
This man, 42 years old, dealing with drugs.
She shot the policeman. Didn't you say eventually they caught up to him and shot her?
She died because he shot her in the car, back and forth of gunshot exchange.
Yeah, I remember he got hit. She got in the car, drove off, and
he wanted to put handcuffs on her. It's something about some people.
And I know she ran away.
Then when time comes to put some handcuffs on you, you just go berserk.
I guess people.
George Floyd was in a behind the wheel of a compact car. Then when they want to put him in the back of a patrol car, he started talking about claustrophobia. Well, hell, the patrol car had more room than the car you just got out of when you was getting ready to drive off. It presumed you were.
Okay.
4,394. 4,394 blacks shot by other blacks in 340 days as of Monday, with 680 murders.
But as you know, many, particularly Black Lives Matter, that organization, they don't care about those numbers. They only care about
why give them coal to stoke their furnace? I wouldn't give them no coal to stoke their furnace.
Yeah.
That's what you do when you repeat the stuff that they say, and the whole narrative is white police officers shoot blacks. Is that their narrative?
Oh, yeah. That's their narrative.
That's all it is.
They don't shoot black, for anybody.
If white police officers are so bad, and you hear blacks saying they shooting and kill, they profiling us and they killing us, why is it that when blacks flee terrible, horrendous, hideous areas, where do they go? They run out to white areas.
That's true.
LeBron white
James
areas that's
does not
that's
live
majority
in the
white population, and guess what the police consist of? White police officers, a white chief, white detectives. So if white police officers are so terrible, why when blacks be fleeing black criminality, they run to white areas? If white police is so terrible and white so bad, even African immigrants, when they come to this country, where do they live? They don't live down in that savagely operated hood that's by not all, but a whole lot. And the majority, or the many, should I say, are scared out of their wits to speak on who they know is doing this, that, and the other because of retaliation.
Well, Black Lives, one of those, one of the heads of Black Lives Matter, within the last month, bought a $1 million home in a white neighborhood.
And why is she bad in the hood?
No, we got. That's true. We don't see any of these. Farrakhan doesn't live in the black neighborhood. Sharpton doesn't live in the black neighborhood. Jesse Jackson doesn't live in one. Black Lives Matter, at least one of them, doesn't live in the black neighborhood. I don't know about the other two.
You know. So if that's what the narrative is. Whites done this. Whites left the city, L.A. Why did they leave the city?
Well, now
they're
coming
the
back in certain cities.
Well, because certain people is gone. They leaving. They've been pushed out, however you
right.
want to describe it. But the thing is why did they leave in the 60s? And what did they leave? They left buildings.
Yeah.
They left a network of suppliers, huh? They left buildings with solid plate glass windows. They left all those things and said, well, I don't know if they said it, but they left. But
mm-hmm.
why did they leave? And then why come it further deteriorate? I've heard all kinds of silly excuses. Why come they didn't turn the buildings into something that then you have to wait for Middle Easterners to come in and do it for you?
Yeah, that's true. I know, like, in Washington, D.C., they left some mansions behind, and other people came in. And
why is it that these Middle Easterners and even Somalis, well, the guy I've been trying to get you, Samba, he knows a whole lot of them. Why is it
mm-hmm.
they can put things together called a susu and turn those structures into profitable business?
Good
oh,
question.
Crazy mess. Amy, what's her name?
Good
Democracy
question.
Now. All she do is making a living off of black excitement.
What kind of
charges did this guy Brown have on him?
Oh boy, I played one of those audios.
Drug
dealing.
I ain't pointing the finger at you. Well, see, that's what people go by. They have research to see what he was doing. If he's selling drugs in the community, is that not further decaying people's lives? How about children? You sell drugs in the community to a male who deplored, whose life sinks down further than where it is now, they can't take care of their children.
Well, that goes back to what we covered about a month ago, so ago, Warren Houston covers it too, the law of cause and effect. In those press conferences with Andrew Brown Jr., they don't talk about the cause. Why was he there? Why was he doing what he was doing? They just talk about the effect, but they don't talk about the cause.
Because he know his ass is going to jail, and he think under some protest activity and a whole bunch of more bull crap that he got the right to be free. Now, that's my analogy of what's going on in this person's mind. A 42-year-old adult with kids. A 42-year-old black male with kids, and he's behaving like that.
That
means he don't care about his responsibilities either, would you not say?
I agree.
See, the thing is that at some point in time, a responsible person would realize that they just don't live for themselves if you got obligations. You just don't live for yourself. Therefore, you should demonstrate some responsible behavior and action to put that into effect. I don't know what degree of attention that you gave your kids, and you say you had some grown kids, but I don't know. I mean, so that means you probably got some grandkids. So I don't know what degree of attention, but when you go out and you indulge in activities that's detrimental to your well-being, your life, that some others is dependent on, then that means that you don't have no concerns not only for yourself, but nor do you have concerns for them. What kind of human being is that?
Well, let's let this next caller tackle that one. 346, your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A.
Good morning.
You know, I'm conservative, but I don't want to be so conservative to where I have to just be politically right and sacrifice somebody on the altar of being politically correct. I don't agree with Candace Owens and the Chauvin incident. And even where laws and rules may give a certain permission, sometimes equity have to kick in. You know, even if the state of Minnesota did allow the procedure, does that give you the right to use a procedure till you kill a man? You know, these are the things you have to question. Same thing, I looked at a situation, I can't think of a case, but there was a case that went up to the Supreme Court for a man who was about to be executed. Well, new evidence came out to prove this man was guilty, but Clarence Thomas wanted to execute the man just based on the statute of limitations that passed. Now, do you execute somebody because the statute of limitations has passed? The new evidence was not even there. Now it's been, you're just going to execute him because that's the rules? No, equity has to kick in. And so this is the situation I see here. Every case is a case-by-case basis based on the information of the defendant. Now, however bad George Floyd's record was, what he did in the past, really, to me, had no bearings. Now, what did maybe have bearings is he had drugs and alcohol in his system, but even one of the doctors that testified said, even if it was a person that didn't have this amount of drugs and stuff in his system, it still would have been detrimental to him. So these are the things that I look at, as opposed to just sacrifice him on a political altar of just being politically correct. Now, when you deal with the Dante Wright situation, that's a whole other situation in general.
his past criminal record to me needs to be aired out because of the actions that he took that caused him his life. So if they're not careful, now this is the police officer I feel like they will be sacrificing on the political altar if the right thing is not done. This lady who shot him, because I do feel like she accidentally made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people all the time, you got to look from a two-sided dimensional. The coin has two sides. So you're looking at it one way. That police officer is looking at that situation a whole other way. And you have to view it from both sides to get a balance understanding or a balanced resolve as to what you're talking about, or how you get an understanding. That person comes out and person just like you every morning, that gets up every morning, put on a uniform and leave out their door, don't know if they're going to return to their family or not. Stopping people, they don't know who they're stopping or what actions they're going to take, and you have to make a split-second decision. See, this is not in the minds of the people that have problems with that. Same thing with the Ohio police officer who had to make a split-second decision. If he wouldn't have shot, it was a sad situation, but if he wouldn't have shot that 16-year-old girl, 16-year-old girl was about to gut that other girl. And the way she was coming, she'd have been good as dead. But we're not
thinking. True. What do you think about this Andrew Brown case, the 22nd video so far? It's still very, very early in the case.
We're talking about the South Carolina incident, the guy that was running from child support. Is that the same case?
No, it's interesting you brought that case with the Ahmaud Arbery. That case has been real quiet, and I think that case originated before George Floyd, but it's been real. You don't hear anything about it. Now, also, I think Andrew Brown Jr. This is just recently in North Carolina. He was fleeing from the police, and he got shot in the back of the head, in his car.
I was listening to that today. I didn't get a real good understanding of that case, and I haven't saw it, but, I have to question any time somebody's shot in the back. You know, why are they being shot in the back, especially in the back of the head?
But now, he was in his car, Warren, and he was driving away or attempting to drive away.
Okay,
he didn't get shot.
Kind of like
he was in his car.
There's another like Dante Wright case. Did he have any warrants?
Yeah, they were there to serve. That's how it started. They were there to serve a warrant.
Okay. I'd have to look at it. I'd have to look at it to get a clear understanding of what happened, because I know that.
And the family and Benjamin Crump is on a roll. He was in Minnesota last week on another high-profile case before they were somewhere else.
Yeah. That was the situation, I think that was in, was it Cincinnati, Ohio, a year or two ago, where the university police shot a man who tried to drive off, shot him and killed him?
I remember that case. That's probably 2 years ago. And is he on the Breonna Taylor case? Was he on that one too?
Not sure.
But
he's
got a bunch
has
of
to be refused. It has to be reviewed on a case by case basis as to what happened, what took place, and why. You know, and what the cause of action, the elements are. Can the elements be proven?
Yeah, there's been many videos of people. What about that though? Of course, now, like these different states, that's another thing people don't understand. States got a right to make the rules and regulations on how the police and authorities behave. Well, not how they behave, but the leeway that they have. The municipality has a right to control and make rules and regulations on how they behave.
Right.
But you had another case where a guy was smoking marijuana, which ain't against the law, but he's sitting behind the wheel, passed out with the transmission and drive. And he was out in front of his mama's house. I think I sent you a video on that. And the police wanted him to get out the car. And, you know, discussion go back and forth. So he puts the car in drive and drives off, but he drives toward the dead end of the street. So the police is hollering at him all the time, stop, don't do that, and so on. So he turns around, then comes at them with the car. Well, hell, he could might have been the one to run over. So they shot him. And then he runs into, no, I tell you what, he went by them, they were shooting. Then he runs into, rams the police car because they had the street blocked. And they shot him and he killed him. You know, he was trying to use the car as a weapon. And he's driving under the influence, meaning that if he passed out once behind the wheel, if he get out in traffic, what danger would he pose to innocent citizens? A whole lot of stuff out there like that. These people choose one. I guess it's because it happened to someone they know directly. But then you got those that's watching that going to say that this is only happening to black people. That's a damn lie. It's not.
That's true, but the media, the mainstream media, selling advertising, black on white, black men getting killed by white policemen, that sells advertising.
And then, like I told you before, in those communities at one time was all white. Blacks moved into those communities. Like the case with the girl in the pink. I think they were the only black family on the block.
Mm-hmm.
They moved into those communities, Warren. So they must not been scared of white folks and white police when they moved in there. All that they have been hearing, I'm sure they heard about it. Who ain't? They moved into those communities. They could have moved to the hood. No. Why they move into these white exclusive communities? At one time, they had restrictions where they didn't want blacks in the community. Guess what? All kind of hell was raised over that. At what point do we look back in history and apply cause and effect, Warren? Well, at one time, they didn't want you in their community. Well, really, they moved from the cities and moved out into the outskirts suburbs because they was getting away for something. You go back further enough, they had covenant restrictions.
The lunch counter sit-ins.
Yeah, right. They didn't want you eating in their lunchrooms either. Now you complaining because your own lunchrooms, your own restaurant is deplorable and don't exist. There's something going on here. I mean, I'm saying that when you take take time to look at this, there's something going on. Whites leave the city. Blacks follow. Whites go set up their own enclave. Blacks use laws and complaints. Say, you won't let us live in the community. After you there for a while.
Some good points.
After you there for a while, next thing you know, something criminal is going on because the police now is shooting you. Well, hell, you said you wanted to live in the community. You ran from your own community.
This is where black folks refuse to be accountable and responsible for their actions. Why do black folks go out to white folks' area? Because they better kept. You know, we run down and tear down our own communities, you know. The crime level is bad, so those that can afford to get out, they get out, they gone, you know. And then one of the strangest things that we happen is, especially if you go in one of those areas and they start talking about you, you'll hear some feedback from that from white folks, too, if they start talking about putting some government apartments around the area. They don't want that around there because they don't want the crime around there. So really, if there was some accountability in the black community, in the black neighborhood, we wouldn't have to leave the hood. We wouldn't, if we were accountable and responsible to take care, that's what Black Wall Street was all about. They had their own community. They didn't separate from one another. They had their own community. They worked in unison, and they had doctors, lawyers, grocery store, whatever they need, they had it. But we're not doing that now.
Well, you know what, Warren? Black Wall Street was a black, nice community, and it got tore up, right?
Right.
Well, hell, Spanish Lake, Berkeley, Ferguson was nice black communities, and blacks moved in there and tore the damn things up.
Wow.
They didn't use no damn airplanes, like folks like to say. But the crime has messed up the community, has affected the assets. The most valuable investment that you can make is a home. Blacks that had assets in their property. When the politics push these elements out into these black communities, because they're not going to the other communities readily, when they see them coming, they take the for sale signs off the lines. And all the transaction and information is done in secret, private. Area in St. Louis called a hill. I tell you, that's what they do. They don't put no for sale signs on their property, on their lawns, because they want to maintain and keep their investment, their vested interest, like Feathers always talk about. When King marched up in Chicago, he marched out into a white community, and they threw rocks at him.
You know,
I used to always wonder, when I used to be in school, you know, we used to have a sport event, and I hated it. I didn't want to get involved. I played baseball because we had to run. But I used to see these cross-country teams, and they was always predominantly white, practically. And I said, I wonder why whites always like to go out on cross country when they're running a long time. Then it finally dawned on them. They've been running from blacks so long, that's what they do. They run cross country. I mean, at some point in time, you got to put logic together.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. And these people put their own self, like this guy Blake, going to that party, and he had a court order to stay the hell away from there. They disregard, you know, that's mental illness, too. It's a curse and mental illness. Anytime you belligerency is a mental illness. It's listed as a mental illness. Long lingering effects is a mental illness. I mean, think about it. If you moaning and groaning over something that happened that you far, far away from it, that's a lingering effect. That's a mental illness. When a person stand up and look at you and they don't see nothing choking you, they don't see nothing pulling on you, they don't see nobody around you sitting right there in the middle of the room and you have these convulsions and shakes and all that stuff, and you got this paranoia, that's a mental illness. Then you got those out there that just keep on amplifying that. They got radio shows. All people calling up in Detroit. Keep on amplifying these effects. All the young blacks that's out there doing well, going to school, nobody never mentions them. I posted something on Facebook showing about the women in engineering. I listed all the damn scholarships that's not being taken. If it is, it's Hispanics and white women that's taken. Where are the black women at? Where are the black kids? It's got to be a curse, Warren. What else could it be?
Yeah.
It's worse than a Harry Potter movie.
Well, part of the problem is I was reading a stat just this past weekend where I think they said 60% of the people that are incarcerated in prison, either 60 or 68, I'm going to put it at 60%. Were functionally illiterate.
I can believe that.
That's a very high number.
Education
education is the problem. You know, education changes the way you view things, the way you look at things, the way you understand the world. And I always say today, I'm grateful to getting a law degree because that's what helped me understand logic as opposed to operating out of emotions. And so, I mean, I often tell this story. My mentor told me when I first started that working on that degree, he said, you know, when you get through, by the time you finish this degree, he said, please be careful with your family and friends. They're going to sound like idiots to you. And so I had no clue what he meant until I finished and realized I really did. So but it lets me know that I had to be, you know, that was the time all that sounded good to me. But after being educated and know how to think and then start listening to stuff that people say, you know, it just sometimes irked me, and I had to be careful because I'd be short-tempered, you know, because I can't believe this person just said that. Because now you're operating more out of your mind of being able to think as opposed to just emotionally reacting.
Yeah, that IRAC is a good indicator of that.
You know, the thing that perplexes me is how skin color is used here in the United States. The young man, a guy that I've been talking to all along, his nephew, who's super smart, and he wanted me to talk to him. He's looking at being an engineer and so on. I talked to him, and I told him also I had my grandson talk to him because he's closer to his age than I am. I'm an old fart. So I've been sending him some YouTube videos on a lot of different things. Elon Musk, SpaceX platform up in space where a black brother by the name of I can't even think of his name, from out in California. He's one of the astronauts. And he came from Oakland. And now he's an astronaut. He went into the Air Force and so on, became a jet pilot.
Oh, God, what's his name? Buford or something like that?
Grover or something. Glover.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking
about. He's up there now. I sent them information on John Hansen, his talks, elegant speaker. Even some, I sent him some lectures, TED Talks, black holes, trains, engineering marvels, because he needs to see all these different things. I just thought of some other stuff I was going to send him on. Artificial intelligence, because if he is as astute as he is now coming out of high school and have done his college requirements for Calc 1, Calc 2, Calc 3 expedition components, chemistry, that's 25 credit units right there. So he must, and his mother is an educator. So he has family backing. I don't know if he got a father. I don't know about that. I know his uncle, but I talk to him practically every Sunday in the conversations we get in. Only arguments we have, he say he's an African. I say, you ain't no African. And I tell him, I said, y'all Africans, prove it. Everybody get quiet. If you're African, prove it. I gave him some information on DNA sequencing because much of the information that you hear these popular black pundits talking about is just not true. And thank goodness for DNA, which have gotten away from archaeological and paleontology fossil finds. It's proven a lot of those narratives, which rightfully so, because at the time it was done, you only had so much technology. You only had so much development in areas at the time. But now things have went to a whole different level with the looking, peering into your genes,
and able to sequence your DNA, telling you where you once was compared to where you are now, and a time period on those differences. So that's what you have to do to cure. You got to expose them to as much resources as you possibly can, but you never know what DNA click that they have in their mind or within their biological makeup that will kick off when these things are exposed to them. They have an inner ineptness for this, that, or the other. So that's what I'm working with on him. And others I have too. I bet he'd never seen a National Society of Black Engineers annual conference where you have over 15,000 young black STEM students there being hired left and right. My grandson went to one, I forget what year it was, 2012. They said, "Papa, I've never been around so many blacks that had positive attitudes and outlooks for their future."
Mm-hmm.
That's what he called me and told me. Hell, this was in 2012. He would have been probably 14 years old. 15, 12, 3, 4 years. Yeah, he would have been probably in the ninth grade.
Well, black engineer.
And you can't carry you can't carry these kids too fast neither. My grandson said, "Papa, I'm an American. I'm not no African." I started asking why. So that lets you know they're starting to think and look at things and using logic to apply to what they're looking at.
Right. Africa is not a country anyway. It's a continent. And so
absolutely.
I mean, just to say you're African-American doesn't make any sense. You're an American that happens to be black, you know, so.
Then you show them why your skin is black. It's because of natural selection. It has a lot to do with your environment. If hominids left the continent was black and they went to other areas and stayed there for 5,000-10,000 years, they wasn't African when they left there. They was what that environment had turned them into. Language, culture, skin color.
And that's what we don't look at, because whether my ancestors, my great-great-great-grandfather come from Africa or not, I have never stepped foot in on the continent myself. I don't know the customs and the language. You know, I'm American. That's all I know. I know baseball, football, basketball. You know, I know this whole capitalistic society. That's what I've been raised around. That's what I know.
And, you know, and that's just what it is. I got my fascination. I bet you couldn't imagine what one of my greatest fascinations is, Warren. Guess what it is? Trains. I go bonkers when I see a locomotive. And when I hear that whistle, man, I be jumping up and down. And don't let me see a steam locomotive that's been refurbished and put out on the tracks. And the steam pouring out, boy, I just love them. I can stop at a railroad crossing and just sit there and watch the train, the cars go by. Listen to the clatter of the wheels. That's a marvel to me.
Well, you buy
then, of course,
with the airplane.
Yeah.
There's a place here in Houston at the George Bush Intercontinental Airport. They got sectioned off for public. You can pull your car out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can sit up a picnic or whatever, and the planes come down real low, almost over your head. And that just fascinates me. Just see them big old planes land, man.
I used to do that in St. Louis before I started flying.
I'm trying to get my grandson to the point where he's ready to start flying. I told him, you're going to have to start off where I left off. But, Wednesday, he finally hit his first ball out the ballpark. One. Matter of fact, was he in Houston? I forget where he was. Because he was in Houston last weekend playing a tournament. But the last Wednesday, a week ago, what's the date? Wednesday? Yeah. He hit his first home run, his first ball out the park. Mm-hmm. And I thought Russia was attacking us.
Mm-hmm.
So, those are good things. Where's the news on that? LA, some of your shows is centered around events. What about that? Pedro Guerrero's son hit three home runs yesterday playing for the Blue Jays. I think he's 21 years old. I watched his father play for the St. Louis Cardinals. Where is the news on that?
Well, hopefully somebody
IBM is working. Intel, I don't know if Intel, but some American company is working for a nano microprocessor that runs at like 4 nanoseconds. That's 400, that's 4 billion operations per second. Now, the thing that I like about Donald Trump, he said China's not going to make those chips and sell them to us. We're not going to give them the technology. We're going to do it here in the United States. Biden has already made the statement that he's going to put the train back on the track, so he's letting them do it, which is a bunch of bull crap.
You know,
where's the news on that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure y'all have heard me quote these statements before, but it just makes me think about the late, great Booker T. You know, he said, one of his quotes, he said, there's another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. And having learned they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the self-habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy, and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs. And that's the situation that Booker T was talking about this in the early 1900s. Here it is, 100 years later, we still got the same problem. Something is wrong.
That's there, right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
He made another statement I like. He said, among a large class, talking about colored folks, there seemed to be a dependence upon the government for every conceivable thing. The members of this class had little ambition to create a position for themselves, but wanted the federal officials to create one for them. How many times I wished then and have often wished since that by some power of magic I might remove the great bulk of these people into the country districts and plant them up on the soil, up on the solid and never deceptive foundation of Mother Nature, where all nations and races that have ever succeeded have gotten their start. A start that at first may be slow and tiresome, but one that nevertheless is real. We haven't figured that out yet. Booker T wrote that over 100 years ago.
Yeah, he did. Marcus Garvey said, I have yet to find one Negro to follow the single instructions of another Negro.
I'm laughing, but it's sad. Yeah.
So what do we do?
Do what you can on your own
like
with your family.
Say, save thyself. Save yourself. Save yourself. Yes, indeed.
You know, you got that picture of a black man just climbing over a wall, reaching back down.
and another man down on the ground with his hands up toward him. And people say, that's him trying to help the other guy out. I say, nope, that ain't it. That's the guy down below trying to pull his ass back down there with him.
Yeah.
That's what that is. But no, I don't, you know, Ellie, I try to give you some people who've done some things on your
good,
show.
Good, his last two guests were good. What's his name? Both of them were good.
I told Simon when his
daughter
was coming back.
And, I'm going to have him on probably next month again.
I'm going to have Simon. I say, when your daughters come back, I want to put them on the radio. These two black girls.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done in school and what they're doing in employment. They quit an $89,000 a year job, went back to school, whereas people are offering them over $100,000. The company is that one guy that does the yachts, yacht racing, another the international marketing company. One of them was working for one, the other was working for the other. But they have, you know, what they have done, it dispels all these rumors. Then, of course, the people, well, that's just two. If you had a stadium that held 10,000 people and you had 9,998 that was doing excellent, had no problem with the police, but you got these voices out here say, well, what about these other two? Yeah, so
we're going to wrap it up for today. If you guys got anything you guys want to
the name of the
tomorrow.
Company was Oracle. It came to my mind, Oracle. I think that's Keith Ellison's business.
Okay.
But anyway, I really appreciate the time, the conversation. Always good to hear Warren because he's always on Facebook showing big plates of food and posing with some beautiful woman.
Good living.
Yeah, Warren really be doing it, man. All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Please be careful.
You guys have a good one.
All right.